This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Some stories break all the rules of what we think people are capable of. And some stories remind us that the most dangerous people are often the ones we trust the most. Not because they earn it, but because they know exactly how to perform it. James Craig wasn't the usual suspect. He wasn't unshaven in a mugshot or muttering through a public defender. Although, look, I mean, he's got a beard in the mugshot, but it's trimmed. This guy was a dentist, a dad. If you saw him on the street, you saw him in line at the subway, you'd probably be like, why are you ordering that chicken that doesn't even identify as chicken anymore? I mean, come on, there's better options on the menu. He was a dad, a husband, the kind of man who was supposed to represent stability, not destroy it from inside out. And yet, here we are. Prosecutors say he slowly poisoned his wife, Angela, while maintaining the appearance of a devoted partner, a committed father, a pillar of his church. And yes, it's Mormon. The case isn't just about murder, it's about masks, because when you've built an entire identity around being the good guy and suddenly you're a defendant in a cyanide poisoning trial, every smile, every church photo, every text that ends with, I love you, becomes evidence. Not of innocence, in this case, of performance. So let's set the stage. Craig allegedly ordered poison online. He allegedly used burner emails. He allegedly timed Angela's smoothie deliveries with his cyanide shipments. And through it all, he presented himself to the outside world as the grieving husband. That's what prosecutors want the jury to see anyway. The split screen of a man who could hug his kids 1 minute and Google how to kill your wife without getting caught the next. But here's a legal twist. A jury doesn't just weigh facts, they weigh people. And when the defendant looks like someone they'd sit next to in a church or trust to fix their kids' braces, the prosecution has to work harder. They have to dismantle a character as much as they build a case. So today, with Eric Faddis, former prosecutor, defense attorney now, and someone who's been in a courtroom, and including this very courtroom, where James Craig is being tried, we're digging into what means and what it means to be put, or what it means to put an image on trial. What do jurors see when a man like James Craig walks in wearing a tie instead of shackles? And how does the law handle a case? With the defendant's likability, maybe the last thing standing between guilt and acquittal. Let's dig into it.
You know, the prosecution has really drawn a contrast between his public-facing image and what they say, the dark deeds were that he committed behind closed doors. He was this dentist. He would actually do lectures internationally. He was traveling. You know, he appeared to be a family man, had six children. But behind the scenes, at least according to the prosecution, he was taking concerted measures to kill his wife. He had an affair that was ongoing to which he admits. There were also some financial troubles. So a lot messier, sort of just below the surface.
Since we don't have cameras in there, is he in jail garb? Is he wearing a suit? What are they allowing him to do at this point?
Visual presentation and demeanor has been kind of surprising to me. So he's allowed to be in there with a suit on that the jurors don't know that he is, living just across the street in the jail. But inside the courtroom, Tony, he really has this confidence about him. Perhaps it's a misplaced confidence, but, he's sitting upright. He's smiling at the gallery. He is participating, conferring with his attorneys regularly. You know, he's not this sort of meek little mouse who's cowering in the corner at all.
Which is interesting. What were you expecting going into this? Especially, I mean, now that we know like all of these things that were going on from the jail, which we'll get into in a little bit, but what were you expecting when you walked in there?
You know, usually in especially in a murder case, the defendant sometimes is scared, fearful, nervous, oftentimes kind of sheepish and unfamiliar with the legal terrain, and sort of, you know, looking overwhelmed and fearful. But that is just not the case with James Craig. Like I said, he's sitting upright. He is nodding his head to answers that he likes and shaking his head no to answers he doesn't like. He is very much engaged in the trial. And I think, you know, I got the impression he feels like he's somewhat untouchable.
What did you see in an opening statements from both? Let's start with the prosecution and what they kind of brought to the table. And then we'll break it all down a little bit further. But just in those opening statements, what was it like?
So the prosecution has a mountain of evidence and in many different forms. So they have the toxicology report that details what they say killed Angela Craig, that being the poisons. They also have alleged jailhouse letters and communications that James Craig made to try and cover up this whole mess. On top of that, they have a ton of texts from James Craig. So we, in a sense, have heard from him already in terms of his admissions to infidelity, what he was saying to Angela Craig. And then also they detailed a photograph of Angela Craig when she was clearly medically compromised that they say he sent to his mistress as his wife of and mother of his six children was dying.
That right there is, that's one of those where it's like, this might be the nail in your coffin, that little text right there. It's I mean, it's like the Koberger picture in the morning after where it's like, that selfie, it just seals it worse than everything you've done. Obviously, though, he's coming across and it sounds like he looks pretty professional. Obviously, if you're an attorney, you're going to want your client to look as best as they can visually in front of that jurors. How did jurors naturally give the benefit of the doubt to someone with Craig's kind of background? You know, the stable, the family man, he's out giving lectures, got the religious ties that he's rocking and all that. I mean, it crumbles people's sense of safety and normalcy to think that that's the guy that went and, you know, slowly poisoned his wife to death until she went brain dead.
Yeah, you know, I think that is certainly the case here. He kind of has a leg up, I would say, just based on that background. And during the defense's opening statement, they talked about that he is, you know, devoutly religious, that he's a family man, was a quasi-successful dentist, depends on who you ask. But yeah, they really sort of painted a picture of him that was starkly contrasted with what the prosecution's opening said. And also, Tony, during defense's opening, they kind of went after Angela Craig, the alleged victim in this case, calling her manipulative and said there's going to be testimony to the effect that she was a manipulative person. We haven't yet seen that inside the courtroom.
How do you think that's going to go? I mean, to go to the dead person and say, well, she was manipulative. Yeah, he was slipping her Visine by the gallon. You know, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, you can be in an unhappy relationship. You can have a partner that's manipulative. But the way out isn't murdering them. Seems like a weird defense to be bringing up, or even a point to bring up when the person is dead.
I'm not sure how it moves the ball for a defense because their likely defense is going to be that Angela Craig was suicidal and somehow did this to herself. Mm-hmm. But being manipulative isn't required to draw that conclusion. A jury could draw that without sort of going after her character in that way. And you always, when you do that, risk insulting the jury, offending them. You know, if this was, in fact, just a suicide by Angela Craig, you don't need to kind of pile on and make her look bad. And I don't think the jury's going to dig that.
If there's one thing this interview has made clear, it's that image is everything. Until it isn't. James Craig spent years building his. A successful dental practice, a big family, respectable life, and for a while it worked. But trials like this tend to peel back all the polish. They put the curtain back on the curated identity, the community reputation, the charming exterior. and ask the jury to look harder. Because this isn't just about whether Craig killed Angela. It's about whether he managed to do it while everyone around him, including Angela herself, believed he was incapable of it. And that's the part that cuts deepest, not just the betrayal of a partner, but the betrayal of perception, of safety, of every text and touch. It now feels like part of a setup. For prosecutors, it's a huge advantage. They can convince a jury to throw out their instincts and trust the evidence. It's not easy. Jury doesn't like to believe that people like James Craig are capable of this. That's why so many get away. It goes against the grain, against the comforting lie that evil has a face we can recognize. And for the defense, this is the lifeline. They can lean into Craig's credibility, into his career, his kids, his calm demeanor. Then they might get jurors to hesitate just enough, just long enough. Because hesitation is the beginning of reasonable doubt. But here's where it gets interesting. Once the jury starts to accept that the mask might be a lie, everything else starts to shift. A timeline of text messages and hospital visits, it doesn't just look suspicious. It looks scripted. That grief in the ER, it starts to read like a theater. And the good guy image, it turns into something darker. A prop in a very intentional performance. So the stakes aren't just high. They're psychological. And this is where the trials are not won or lost, not just in evidence, but in narrative. And whether the jury believes they're looking at a man who made a mistake or a man who made a plan. Let me know your thoughts on the case thus far in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not there already, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi so you don't miss out on any of that and having your voice heard. If you're just listening to us on the podcast platforms, be sure to search us on YouTube so you don't miss any of us right there. We do greatly appreciate that. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Up next in our conversation, our next part going to be dropping for you tomorrow. We're going to be going deeper because the murder itself, if prosecutors are right, it wasn't loud, it wasn't messy, it was slow, steady, a controlled descent into death. We'll be talking about poison. Yeah. So like I said, press subscribe. It's coming up in the feed tomorrow. If it's already there, then you can binge away right now. If you want to listen to it right now, get an advance to listen, then become a premium subscriber, either on the podcast platforms, on Apple Podcasts, or on YouTube. Until next time, I am Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.